This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to the January 11th, 2021 For Your Benefit radio show. We're fortunate enough today to have Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefit Director, NITP. And as a duo, we've been doing this for an awful long time. Right, Tammy?
We have been, Bob. I've lost track of how many years, but I think it's probably close to 20 if you count the times we did it out of that little studio.
Oh, yeah. With a card table and four mics. I remember it well. So Tammy and I welcome Paula and Jacob, right?
Yes.
Okay. RHU, CEO of the American Foreign Service Protective Association, sponsor of Foreign Service Benefit Plans. And good morning, Paula.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back.
Well, this is a pleasure because after this intro, I take notes for the next however many minutes we're on. And for those of you that don't know, this is a powerhouse duo that's forgotten more about federal benefit plans than most people know. Paul is a subject matter expert in federal health insurance and serves as an adjunct faculty of the Foreign Service Institute. Wow. So let's start out. FEHB program, impact of COVID-19 on healthcare, and in particular, the FEHB program. So what have you found that to be an issue, Paula?
Well, as everybody knows, there is not one person, I think, on the face of the earth that COVID has not hit and has not affected in one way or another. And federal employees and retirees, members of the FEHB program, are no exception. A lot of the impact is not even being felt yet, but it behooves the plans to really anticipate this. The cost of the testing was the beginning, and that's on the plans. And all the plans have tried to be very flexible in getting the test and paying for the tests. Our plan in particular, the Foreign Service Benefit Plan, has an extra challenge of working with the overseas as well. The vaccines are coming into play. Government, of course, is paying for the ingredient costs for the actual vaccines, but it's up to the plans to pay for the administration costs for now. So we're working with our partners to make sure that when you walk in to get a vaccine, you're concentrating on the vaccine and not who's going to pay for what. That's our job.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Paula. I was just thinking about what you were just saying. And my thoughts were when COVID hit last spring, I figured, oh, well, no one's going to go to the doctor anymore this year because they don't want to be around people or they're not going to get elective surgeries, which has played out to be true. So I thought there would be a reduction in cost. I didn't realize that the health plans had to pick up the cost of the testing and the cost of the vaccine administration. So you've got costs that you've never had before that kind of took the place of reimbursing some of these other expenses, plus those things that people didn't do this year, they've probably delayed and will be doing them probably later on in 2021. So how do you plan for all of that? I guess that's all part of your long-range planning.
Well, it is. And the plans, you know, we've been doing this for a very, very long time. And so when you're looking at the premium, a lot of the issue is that we haven't even run across yet. This virus and treatment of it is going to run into the millions of dollars. When you talk about not days, but weeks and months in the ICU. No, and no. It's kind of scary, but plans have been doing this, like I said, for a very long time. And we anticipate that, not just with that cost of care, but the delayed treatment, like you said, Tammy. The thing is, you know, there has been a reduction in inpatient surgeries and outpatient testing and that. But understand, this is not like car insurance. You know, when you avoid an accident, you avoid an accident. When you delay treatment, that runs the risk of having a more serious or turning into a chronic condition that will require treatment. So the plants have been very good at anticipating this and actually looking at the premium load on that in the hopes of really making sure that all of us are prepared for 2021 and 2022. And I don't think we're going to get out of this until 2025 or so. I really think that this is going to be an ongoing thing for the plants, but we're ready.
I know.
And OPM makes sure that we're ready.
That's right. Because as soon as open season ended in December, you were probably already working on open season 2021 that's coming up this year. So I know you guys, this is a year-round activity that, that has to keep going on.
Yes.
Did we cover everything? Oh, I know the other thing with COVID that's been an issue, it's kind of an indirect effect of COVID, is the mental health issues that so many people have suffered, more loneliness, and that's resulted in depression. So do the health plans, and yours in particular, have benefits for mental health that are comparable to the other physical ailments that we might have, or the treatment of the actual disease?
I can speak for my plan, but I really feel comfortable with really touting all of the health plans, because we are all very, very concerned about the mental health aspect of this. And actually some experts are saying that mental health is going to be the next pandemic. When I said that there has been a delayed treatment and there has in fact been lower what we call, you know, the treatment cost, the only place that is not the case, believe it or not, is in mental health. And mental health, the treatment of mental health during this pandemic has increased anywhere between 20 and 25%.
Wow, that's a lot.
In behavioral health. And the plans have really been working day and night to make sure that their specific members, and I don't care what plan you're talking about, all of us are very concerned and offering a lot of programs, whether it's digital programs, or one of the big things now is telehealth.
Yep.
Because it is better for them. At least they have counselors that they can get to without leaving the home. And that has seen an increase astronomically.
We've seen a lot of increase in everything virtual these days, right? Whether it's virtual seminars or virtual talking to your kids or grandkids. So I know telehealth and telemed have really seen a big expansion, and I think people are getting more used to doing things online, even when it comes to talking to doctors. So one of the things I was confused about, and I know you've straightened me out from time to time, but I'd like you to help the listeners understand, what's the difference between telehealth and telemed? Because I know there is a difference between the two, and most of the plans offer one or the other or both. So when you hear those terms, what do they really mean?
So, you know, that this has been a growing mode of treatment for probably the last 5 years. And telehealth is really when you are able to talk to a provider, usually a vendor that the health plan has contracted with. And you can do it immediately right from your home via a computer or your laptop or your tablet. I mean, for example, the Foreign Service Benefit Plan, we have a vendor stateside with Teladoc, and they handle all of our telehealth calls. And overseas, we finally found a vendor to help our overseas members, which was challenging at best, through what we call VHealth. So that means that you can go, and I've used the Teladoc before, and it's great. You just call them up, whatever, an earache, a rash, and you know, eye pain, back pain, whatever.
Is there a charge for that service?
It depends on the plans. A lot of the plans have zero cost share, because especially at the beginning, the plans really wanted the people, the members, to embrace this so that they could get care. And rightfully so, especially now that people can't leave their home. That differs from telemed. Now, telemed, as we differentiate it, is the ability to have a virtual visit with your own physician, your PCP, or your own specialist, whether it's an orthopedist or whatever. And for many of the plans for many, many years, that has been excluded. You know, we didn't pay for phone calls from doctors. We didn't pay for video visits. A lot of our concern then evolved, not just as it was a normal exclusion, but we really had to make sure that the platforms were HIPAA compliant, and the doc and the providers had to make sure of that.
Right.
That has evolved too. Back when COVID first hit in March, many of the plans, including ours, just took the exclusion off because we wanted to provide whatever our members needed.
Right.
And we worked, and that was on an emergency approval from OPM. And they were very flexible with us. Many of the plans have worked with OPM for 2021 to make that a normal benefit. And when I say normal benefit, I mean as in any other office visit.
Right.
So telemed will usually be paid at a regular office visit level, meaning subject to a deductible or co-share insurance or co-payment, because it's treated and it's really surprisingly charged just like a regular office visit. But we were able to get that into the benefit package because it's becoming a very popular and right now a very necessary service.
I think that's great. Yeah, I think a lot of people would appreciate that becoming a permanent feature. I know I have a friend of mine that lives in Alaska, and I know for his children, he had to visit doctors in Seattle, Washington. So it was all telemedicine all the way through. I said, how do you do that? And he said, well, we take their temperature and tell the doctor what the temperature was and that sort of thing. Whoops, excuse me.
You can imagine. And there's so many technologies now out there where they can take your blood pressure and your EKG and all of that. And this is just coming. I mean, there is so much more in the next couple of years that is evolving in this arena. It's a very exciting time.
With regards to your members, how do they initially approach telemed? They know they can't go in, but do they get? They think they don't get the same service as what they would get if they went in on the phone. But I've talked to the docs, and they say initially there's a pushback, but once they see it, it's actually just as good technically, and it's more efficient time-wise.
You're right, and of course, you know, with any new treatment. And this was considered like a new treatment, people are skeptical. How can my doctor possibly give me a good reading when I'm on the phone and when I'm video? But, you know, things evolve. A lot of doctors are ordering these tests. For example, you can actually get a physical with some doctors. They order the tests before, the blood tests and stuff, and then they're able to go through them with the person right there online. Or a lot of people use it for a refill of prescriptions. You've heard this, well, I'm not going to refill your prescription until you come in and see me, right? Well, they don't have to do that now. They can do it through telemed. So people are finding it a much more convenient way to get their medical care with a doctor they know and trust and can talk to.
Well, those are the new features that are kind of relevant to what's been going on in our virtual world. But I know there's other benefits that some plans offer. And I know yours has some pretty interesting offerings because of your relationship with overseas healthcare. So what are some of the things such as alternative healthcare that's offered by your plan in particular? And people can look for that in other plans. I don't know that how many offer these things, but I think people are surprised when I tell them.
Well, I would like to say that my plan has, you know, has the best, but I can't because I don't believe that. Also, most of the plans do offer some chiropractor and acupuncture. I mean, we do tend to be very generous with our offerings in that because of where our people are and the healthcare that they're used to getting in foreign countries. That way, we also offer massage therapy, which is a very, very, very popular benefit with our members, and they are very excited about that. So the plans are getting better at offering and understanding what their members really need, the care that they really need, and are offering that. Many people don't realize, though, that there's other things. For example, hearing aids. I can't tell you the number of people who are surprised when I say, yeah, most of the FEHB plans now offer a hearing aid benefit.
Now, I'm surprised because Medicare doesn't cover hearing aids. Yeah. So you have to get that through your supplemental coverage or your FEHB plan.
Exactly. And many of them do. And even a lot of the FEHB plans offer a discount program on hearing aids that you can use along with the actual benefit. So you're, you know, so that is really a great way to go. And a lot of the plans, believe it or not, are offering other ancillary services that we call it, like discounts on in-home classes or actually workout equipment in-home, because not many people want to go to a gym right now. Yet it's so important to keep up that part of their health.
Absolutely.
So what are the plans doing? Mm-hmm. And I always recommend, regardless of what plan you have, to check it out. You might be very surprised at how far the FEHB plans have come in supporting your health journey.
It's time now to let our sponsor say a little bit about what they do, and they're kind enough to support the show as well.
Federal Open season is over, but there's never been a better time to reevaluate your life insurance coverage. Get life insurance for less with WAPA. WAPA has been insuring the future of federal employees for more than 75 years. WAPA can be used as a supplement or replacement for your existing policy and can cost less than Fegley. In fact, last year, members who switched saved $375 on average. Although open season is over, you can apply anytime for WAPA Group Term Life Insurance. See how much you can save by visiting WAPA.org today.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today with the two hosts, Tammy Flanagan and myself, Bob Lines, and welcoming and listening to Paula Jacob, RHU CEO of the American Foreign Service Protective Association. And Paula and Tammy are a formidable duo, but the spotlight is on Paula. Where did we leave off?
I do want to go back, and because I think that this is really important. When we were talking, Tammy and Bob, about mental health, I really do want to go back and do a little bit of focus on the kids. And because mental health is not just affecting the adults that are dealing with balancing work and home and kids and school and everything. The kids are really suffering, and I don't care whether they're 3 or 6 or teenagers. And I would urge parents to really look at what their plans are offering for the mental health benefits, whether it's coaching or just digital stuff for kids and teenagers, especially. We have an entire section on our website devoted to it. So I would recommend that. I think I would be doing a disservice by not including that.
Thanks for that. And Paula, I know that we talk a lot about the fact that Foreign Service Benefit Program works a lot with State Department employees who work and sometimes live overseas, even after retirement, I suppose. But your plan is also open to others. So there might be people who work for DOD and other agencies that are enrolled in your plan. So as you're hearing the information Paula's talking about, especially what's relative specifically to the Foreign Service Plan, you may want to check out their website. What is the website they can go to, Paula?
Sure. It's www.afspa, that's AFSPA.org.
And that's where you can find out which agencies are eligible to participate in this plan, because it really is a neat plan, because it does have some of these benefits that you might not expect to find in one of the federal health plans. I just wanted to mention that. I know it's early in the year because open season just ended, but maybe tuck that away in your memory for next year. As far as the telehealth, and we'll leave this topic, if somebody has that benefit through their health plan, is that a number, a phone number that they can find on usually on their card, or do they have to go to the website? How do they find out who to call to get that service?
It depends on the health plan. They many of us have it on our cards now, but we don't recard every year. So as the benefits evolve, it may not be there, but I would recommend go to the plan's website. It's in the brochure under the normal benefits. So that would be, most of the plans would have telehealth in the section 5A under a subsection for telehealth. So I would recommend that they do that. And it's usually a phone number or a website. I mean, I have one, I have ours as a favorites on my mind, so I can just click it and it's there.
Perfect.
Takes about 5 minutes.
And I know the health plan brochures, I think they used to be, maybe they still are, but I'm getting used to them. They used to be so daunting that nobody wanted to look at their health plan brochure, but I think they have become more user-friendly and the different sections are uniform, whether you're talking about the Foreign Service Plan or one of the other FEHB plans. So I always keep mine on my desk handy just in case there's a need for healthcare. I always check to see what's my copay going to be or what's the coinsurance. So I think employees and retirees may want to take another look at their health plan brochure. I know it's early in the year. It's that time of the year when people do try to make plans for how they're going to improve their life for 2021. And I know your health plan and many of the health plans do offer some assistance with people who have chronic health conditions, whether it's chronic overweight like I suffer from, or whether it's diabetes or they suffer from cancer. So you kind of partner with your participants to help them manage those conditions that they have or improve their health. So can you go over a little bit about how you collaborate with your members on issues they may have that they want to work on?
Absolutely. And as a subject matter expert, you know, I'm going to say that it's not just the Foreign Service Plan. All of the plans in the FEHB are very concerned about taking care of members with these chronic conditions, whether it be high blood pressure or diabetes. And a lot of the plans have programs that are specific to them. I mean, for example, they may have, if you have diabetes, they actually have a program that you can get a monitor and your test strips, and you are constantly supported 24/7 with this. And it's just our way of making sure that our members with these conditions are getting the best care. Because it's sometimes very hard to just call up your doctor. It's almost all the time just very hard just to call up your doctor. So that's what the plans are doing. And it's not just for those two, which are the major ones, of course, blood pressure and diabetes. But you're also talking about many plans have specific benefits and support for cancer. I mean, we have actually a dietary support for members with cancer because, you know, it's hard to be on chemo and try to keep that nutrition up. And a lot of the plants now at OPM's urging are really looking at pain management, which in many cases is a chronic condition and can result in opioid use, as we all know.
It's been a huge problem.
And that epidemic has not gone away. I mean, we're all focused on COVID now. But the use of opioid is still an epidemic and it hasn't gone away. So the plans are looking at innovative benefits where, you know, you are actually partnering with that member. And it could be a lot of different things like non-pharmacological modalities, maybe injection therapies or medical devices like nerve stimulators, things like that. So if anybody is in that spectrum, I would really recommend you just look and talking to a care manager. The plans have what they call care managers now, nurses and professionals that are willing to really develop a plan strictly for them. I always try to focus on the plan's commitment to that personal support for just that one person. And they'd be very pleased with what the plans are doing. I mean, we're actually looking at a pilot for virtual physical therapy.
Paula, do you find folks with this malady are not so forthcoming that they have the issue, but they do need treatment?
I mean, we do. We try to reach out to people with that when we can see through their claims information that they may have a problem if they've maybe seen an orthopedist 3 or 4 times or whatever. And they may not realize that there's better support out there if they just reach out. So our care managers are pretty good at reaching out to that person. Most of the plans, actually, if they know you're going into the hospital, will do an outbound call saying, we're here for you. You'll probably be on an opioid when you leave the hospital, but we're here to support you and to get you off of that opioid as soon as we can and develop new ways to manage your pain.
That's nice that the plans do partner with the actual issues that are going on with the people. And I know that's not unique to your plan, because sometimes I'll go to my NARF meetings, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, and I'll hear some of the members saying, hey, I just got a blood pressure cuff, you know, automatically my health plan is so good. But a lot of the plans are now doing that. So that's really a nice service. And it's not something they have to pay for, right?
There's normally not, depending on the health plan, but most of us are offering that as just a regular benefit.
Benefit service. So that's great. I love that. So let's move from there into some wellness issues, because, you know, some of us are pretty healthy and we want to stay that way. So what are some of the things that the health plans are doing? And again, in your plan in particular, what are you doing to help people stay well and healthy? And are there some things people can do to actually get rewarded for being in good health, or to at least take care of and maintain the health that they currently have?
Thank you. Yes. Well, wellness is, of course, is always a concern, and actually a big initiative for OPM and all of the health plans. And most of us now have we've gotten pretty good at offering what we call a full wellness program. And the plans will ask you to start with a health risk assessment, which really is the building block of anything else that moves forward. And it's strictly a questionnaire that you complete. And that really helps guide through what your specific challenges are. And you actually get a summary of that. And then working with the care manager.
And you get a reward. You get $75 for doing that. Well, you left out the most important part.
But working with the health coach or care manager, you develop a plan at, you know, getting you healthy, first of all, and then keeping you that way. And we've gotten better at offering the rewards that really count for people, whether they're healthy or they have a chronic condition. We actually were our members, because we're very lucky to have a lot of healthy members, and they're like, well, what about us? What rewards are you getting for us? So we actually had to step back, as all the plans did, and rethink, yeah, you're right. You know, what are we doing to keep you healthy? So we've gotten better at developing that reward system, where even if you just go for your normal physical, you're going to get something in your health, in your money pot to use for deductibles and co-insurance and drug co-pays, and really things at the pharmacy that you wouldn't think would qualify, like antacids, things like that.
I noticed that with your plan in particular, I was so excited when I went to the grocery store, because we have a pharmacy at our store in Florida, and I got my flu shot and they gave me a $10 to go buy groceries. But I noticed with your plan, if I get my flu shot, you provide $25 in reimbursement. So that's on top of what the grocery store gave. So that's great.
And that's new. And this is our focus on, you know, how do we keep healthy people healthy, a flu shot, or even your cancer screenings, your breast cancer screenings and cervical cancer screenings. We've added that. Things that everybody knows they should be doing. Now there's an incentive to do that.
What's a good way to remind people on this? Because I find myself with the same problem. I know these rewards are there. I know they're part of my health plan. But when I, you know, I'm running late everywhere. So when I jump out of my chair to go to the doctor, I forget to take the form with me. So is there a way for people to not forget to get this stuff done? Because it is early in the year. So now's a good time to set up a plan to actually get the rewards and get the things done that are going to help maintain your health.
Absolutely. And the plans do it very differently. But usually, like your physical exam and your biometric screening, a lot of plans have partnerships with different labs, Quest Lab, LabCorp, things like that. Or your doctor can fill out a specific form and it goes through the system so they know what to count. Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised how quickly that those benefits add up.
Add up. Yep. So I guess maybe print out the form and have it handy when you're ready to walk out the door to go to the lab or go to the doctor, because that is very worthwhile. And it's nice to get some compensation for doing what you should be doing.
Absolutely. And the plans, like I said, have gotten better. Actually, our members can earn up to $400 a year in healthy rewards.
And you can use that towards the deductible and copays as well?
Deductible, coinsurance, any of those IRS approved medical expenses that are over the counter. So it's pretty flexible.
That's great. And that's outlined both on the website and also in the plan brochure as well?
Yes. And there's actually a special pamphlet on our website that is Simple Steps for Living Well Together.
And what is your website?
And all plans have it, not just us.
But people are listening. So what website would they go to? I mean, you might be a little uneasy given the website, but I'll have to ask.
It is, again, it's AFSPA, AFSPA.org/FSBP. And we have a whole section on wellness.
Yep, you do. I'm looking at it right now and it's very well laid out and very explanatory. So just, and like you said, most of the plans have this. I think a lot of people just overlook it or time goes by and it's the end of the year and they never got it done. Guilty of that same thing. But it's definitely worth taking a look at. So put that on your list, everybody, to do that. The next thing we wanted to talk a little bit about was just some of the little things that kind of held over from last year. For instance, some people did carry over FSA money from 2020 to 21. What was the limit on that and how does that work? When do they have to use it by?
So this is for active duty employees only. FSAs are not available to retirees. And in the summer, the FSA feds decided to increase what you could carry over to $550. Now, and that has been, and it's still in effect. However, with this new law that the CAA that just came out, they're looking because we did get some relief and there is something out there that you could carry over more. Now, the last time I looked, which was Friday, I believe, I looked at the FSA Fed's website and they are reviewing that piece of regulation and will report back on what they plan to do about in either keeping it at $550 carryover or increasing that depending on what that reg says. I can't speak for FSA feds, but I know that they are looking at it and I'm sure they will do what they feel is best for the programs and the enrollees in that plan.
Yeah, I guess there were some things in the CARES Act last year that helped people make changes to their FSA account over the summer.
In the middle of the year, right.
Yeah.
So now we're just waiting to see how much they can carry over. But for now, today, it is $550, an increase of $50 from what it usually is.
And so when you start using your FSA money, that's the money that gets spent first before this year's allotment takes over.
Yeah, because it just totally rolled over. And what people hopefully did is when they, because this is something that is a mandatory open season activity, you have to take an action. Hopefully they remembered that, oh yeah, I didn't use $400, so I don't have to put quite so much in.
Right. But forgive me if you already mentioned this, Paula, but I was just thinking of the other thing that goes along with that is in order to carry over anything, you have to participate in 2021. So if you're not contributing to FSA this year, then you would have forfeited any leftover funds.
All of the money.
Or if you would have retired the end of last year as well.
Correct.
That's a nice provision because it forces you to think. And it would have the health care benefit associated with it rather than the money go up in smoke.
Correct, yes. And well, considering this is an IRS rule that you have to re-enroll every year. So, and people should take the time to do the math.
Absolutely.
And it's a great benefit. It's all the employees' money. I mean, the government isn't paying any additional money, but you might as well get that tax break because you're going to have those costs anyway. You're going to have the deductible costs. You're going to have the prescription costs. You might as well get that tax break.
Yeah, and for big expenses like crowns or root canals or LASIK eye surgery, it's a way to budget that expense over 26 pay periods rather than all at once big check that you have to write out when you have that service done.
On top of that, you can use that money on right away. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have it in your balance.
Yep.
If you decide you're going to get LASIK January,
yep.
You can take all the money that, even if it's not in your account, you can take all of it, claim all of it in January,
and
then have to pay it back, of course, through your
over the course of the year.
Right.
I know that some of the plans, all of the plans, not some of them, but they all have as a way of kind of gauging the plan. And during open season, you see a lot of this when you're comparing plans. There's surveys that are apparently done to assess the satisfaction of members with those plans. Can you talk a little bit about how that works and how much weight to put on that and who is actually surveyed? Because I've never gotten such a survey. So I'm wondering, how does that really work? And what does that tell you about the plan when you read those results?
So every year, the OPM requires the plans to do a member satisfaction survey. It's called a consumer satisfaction survey, and it is random. So your number just didn't come up. It's not that they don't like you. It's just that, you know, well, don't feel bad. I haven't gotten one either.
Maybe they know better than to survey.
They probably
us.
Know better than to send one to me. But it is random, and it's an OPM requirement. And it's really important for you to complete that and return it, because we need to know what's going on. And while a lot of the questions really aren't directly relevant to the health plan, it does give a better idea of the makeup of the membership, you know, and what the membership, the whole FEHB membership is thinking. How often they go to a physician, things like that. What is their general health? Things like that. How long they had to wait at a doctor's office, which is really, you know, it could be considered a quality of care issue. Mm-hmm. So even though some of those questions you're wondering, well, why do they want to know that? There really is a reason that that we've asked those questions.
Right.
And and we do run the risk of people not being happy with the plan, but that's okay, because you can't fix something if you don't know it existing, right? So it really is very helpful to the plans. OPM reviews it, and they actually score us on it. But the whole idea is making us a better plan and a better FEHB program for those we serve.
I think some of it's a communication issue, because I'm thinking in particular of these high deductible health plans that are out there. And I've always been a fan of them for people who are trying to set aside.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
I think a lot of people didn't understand how they worked or the tax savings issue of it. So they got low scores on those customer surveys. I've noticed in recent years, people are learning more. Education is better there. So the scores are coming up. So you have to keep in mind why those scores might be the way they are. Or you might have a plan that has a lot of older and sicker retirees in it that might pull the score down for instance, you know, how many times you have to go to the doctor, how long you have to wait, or things like that. So I think it's a tool, but I don't think that it's a tell-all tool for choosing which health plan you want to enroll in.
I couldn't agree more. You know, because some, you know, I think all of the plans would just love to survey and ask specific questions, you know, that aren't the uniform questions. But we can't do that.
Can't and
then, you know, you run the risk of over surveying. You know, yep. People are just sick to death of surveys.
That's right. So,
but this one you should do.
Andrew tells me there's one more spot to listen to, and it's about NITP, the company that puts this on. So let's listen to what they can offer our listeners.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to the final 13 minutes of today's show. Tammy Flanagan and I, co-hosts of the show, and Paula Jacob, and she is just a delight to listen to, and Tammy as well. I'm just taking notes. Okay, we got 11 minutes yet.
Well, we're almost to my favorite part of the show where we get to talk about Medicare, one of my favorite topics. But before we do, you had something on your outline, Paula, about the HIPAA 3 form, and I don't even know what that is. So could you explain about that?
So, yes, thank you, Tammy. The HIPAA 3 form is the form that a member should complete to allow the health plan to talk to a family member. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's really important if your husband or your spouse, your sister, your child wants to talk to us about anything, remember, we're not allowed to talk to them unless we have that form on file.
So that has to be on file with the insurance company as well as with the doctors. Because I know at the doctors, they always have you sign a HIPAA form of who can have information about your health. I never thought about letting the insurance plan know.
Correct. Huh. And it's more than that. If you would have to go to the hospital and your husband would call and say, I need to know what claims have been filed or you know, what I need to do, we can't talk to him. Because
where
it's
is that
you.
Form? Is that the website?
Yes, it is on the website, and all of the plans have it. So you either should either fill that out if you want us to be able to talk to a family member, or you'd have to show us a power of attorney.
Okay. So would a healthcare power of attorney be good enough for?
Sure. Right. Okay. But the HIPAA 3 form is very, very easy to complete. It's one page and you're done.
Well, that's good.
And it's
that's
just, you know, my spouse or like I have one, of course, on file for me. It's my spouse and then a couple of the kids, my adult children. And it just makes life a lot easier if, heaven forbid, something would happen.
Yeah, because that can be really frustrating if you can't find out about your loved one or get information that you need to get them the proper care.
But it's more than that. It's even if you're the one who handles your claims and you want to call to see if it was paid on your spouse. Sorry.
That's right. Yep. I've run into that my husband runs into that all the time because I set everything up and I didn't know you had to do that. So when he calls, they act like they don't want to talk to him, even though he pays all the bills. Oh, well.
Right. Yeah. So fill out the HIPAA 3 form, no matter what plan you have.
All right. So let's change gears and talk about coordinating Medicare with FEHB, because I know you're the same way, Paula. You get questions from your participants and the classes that you teach. And I know this is always a big topic for federal retirees, especially when they are 65 and older, and they face that decision of what to do about Medicare, and they think, I've had great health insurance for, you know, 35 years. Why do I need to do anything with Medicare? Do I have to enroll in Medicare? And if I do, why do I have to pay extra for it? So could you give us just a brief overview of what happens when somebody turns 65? And this is mainly for our retirees, because if you're still working and you have health insurance as an employee, you can delay that Part B decision of Medicare. But maybe talk a little bit about what people need to think about when they're facing that decision of Medicare, generally at age 65.
Sure, happy to. So Medicare, there's several parts of Medicare. So let's not blanket them all together. Right, okay, right. So Medicare Part A is the hospital insurance. And when you turn age 65, doesn't matter whether you're working or not, you should enroll. It's free. Believe me, you've already paid with taxes.
Yep. So what does that cover?
And, it covers your hospitalization. When you
and
go
the doctor to says we're admitting
like
you.
That. Right. Things like that. Inpatient confinement. Yep. Things like that. So that's really a no-brainer. Yep. The big decision is not to be Q, but to be or not to be. Do I want to enroll in Medicare Part B? As a federal, the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program does not require their annuitants to enroll in Medicare. Now, that's different for TRICARE, but when you're talking about the FEHB program, it does not require you to. Because you can keep, you are allowed to keep your benefits into retirement. It's great to be a Fed, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's just a wonderful, wonderful benefit. So why would you want to do that? Because you can keep your benefits, and it's the same benefits. You get the same benefits. You get the same premium, all of it, as a retiree. Where there's reasons to not do it. A lot of it is because Medicare, there is a monthly premium. The standard premium is $148.50 Part B.
That's per person.
2021. That's per person. It's not per family. There is no family enrollment in Medicare. And then if you hit the means tested, testing, that the higher income you have, the more that Medicare Part B premium is going to cost.
That's our favorite Aunt Irma.
Yes, it actually, you know, this is a major sticking point because people look at it and say you can go from $148 all the way up
to $504
per person. So yep. That's a lot.
And for federal employees, that does sound like a lot of money. But I have to add, not that I'm in a private sector plan, but I have friends, and I'm sure a lot of people do, that don't have the benefit of FEHB. And they're paying, on average, $2,000 a month or more just for health premiums. And that's for a really high deductible plan without those incentives that the FEHB plans offer. So you have to put it into perspective. But again, like you said, you know, if we still have our health insurance going into retirement, do we even want to pay another $148.50 a month? So what are some of those incentives that are offered?
Yeah, so the pros and cons are this. And I did want to clarify one thing you said to Tammy, because I want to make sure that people understand that when you turn age 65 in regards to Medicare Part B, when you're turning age 65, but if you are still actively employed and you have your health insurance as an active employee, then you are not required to make that Medicare Part B decision at that time.
Is this once just not a matter of you working?
Right. Having you've health got insurance. To have that health insurance.
Or through your spouse who's working.
Yes, as long as you have the health insurance as an active employee. But if you, in the federal, you know, because many like Foreign Service can retire earlier, and that would fall under retiree benefits, mm-hmm. not active duty benefits. So there's a real distinction there. And I want to make sure that people understand that. But going back to your question about the pros and cons, it's an individual decision, right? But I hate to tell people this, because while that sounds really expensive to have both Medicare Part B and your FEHB, because you only go to the doctor once a year or once every 6 months. And when you retire, I'm going to hike and I'm going to do all this stuff and I'm going to travel. And you may very well do that until you can't, until all of a sudden, you know, life catches up with you. And as we age, our health usually doesn't get better. That once every 6 month office visit is going to turn into once every 3 months, several different doctors. And every time you walk in there, it's another co-insurance or another copay. So as you say, you may be very healthy at age 65, but you're probably going to live till you're 85.
Or 95, or even 105.
When you are looking at that Medicare Part B decision at age 65, and those numbers sound daunting, think of what private sector people are going through right now when they have to pay for Medicare and then a Medicare supplement, and they're paying thousands of dollars a month and still struggling with paying for their medications. Mm-hmm. So really take a longer view of that and not just look at the next 2 years where, yes, it may cost you, but remember that means test. They go back every year and they look at your adjusted gross income every single year. So while it may look like a lot now, as your income goes down, so will your premium for Medicare Part B. You got them both. You're virtually 100% covered, depending on what provider you go to. And there's a lot of FEHB incentives. And I know we're running out of time, but many plans have put in incentives for the retiree, for the annuitant to get Medicare Part B, whether it's waiving coinsurance and copays, deductibles. Some plans will offer lower prescription drug copays for members with Part B. Some plans actually have limited reimbursement for your Medicare Part B premium, even up to $900. A lot of these HMOs are paying much more than that as an incentive. And I also, even though we don't have it, I also would be remiss if I did not point out a lot of, there are a few of the plans that have actually gone presented a Medicare Advantage plan strictly for federal retirees.
Yep.
So you are not suspending your FEHB plan in order to get into a Medicare Advantage plan.
Yep.
While open season is over, it may be something, not any of my members who are listening, because we don't want to lose you, but no, seriously, it may be something that the federal annuitant may want to look at next open season.
But your plan is a good one because a lot of retirees do like to travel. And I know the Foreign Service plan works so well when you do travel, even though Medicare doesn't cover you overseas, your plan covers. And then when you're back in the States, you do waive the deductibles and copays once Medicare is primary when you're getting care in the U.S. So it is a good choice and it's a reasonable premium for what you're getting. My goodness, you know, you have the full range of benefits.
I will
toot your horn a little bit, even though I know you don't want
you.
To.
But I can't.
We have 30 seconds.
So how do you want to wrap things up, Paula?
I just want to emphasize that as a federal employee or an annuitant, you have great health plans. No matter what plan you have, you've chosen a fantastic one. Use us and really get to the benefits that will help you get healthy and stay healthy and support you through your health journey. Your biggest asset is your health. Let us help you.
And listening to this show, today's show.
And listening to today's show.
Anyway, thank you both, and we'll be back next week.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.